on today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 174, Whiffen Poofs, a Silesian steel company, reform school, and Albert Inarrato. All of this and more.
The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose.
Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Welcome, kids. That's a good one. Welcome to the Flatus Show. This is Kenty, your host. Shiza. Come on. Hold on. This is Kenty, your host, and your co-host, my co-host, Jose. Oh, this sucks. I'm Kenty, your host, and my co-host, Jose, is out shopping at Bloomingdale's. That's a little better. I have a problem with the gain on my input in the mic, because this is a brand new mic. How's it sound? I think it sounds terrific. And while I'm on the subject about the mic, I just want to thank Tim from For Whatever Reason podcast. That's forwhatever.net. He's a good friend of mine, him and his wife Nanette. They're in Georgia. And he helped me figure out what I need to do to get better sound using my laptop. Because as you know, my eMac is dead. And It is gone. So I wanted to get a new computer, and he said, no, you don't really need a new computer. You can use what you have. You just need to get a new microphone set up, and it will sound better. And you know what? He was absolutely right. And he also, I said to him, well, I need a new computer because I have to have a bigger screen because I want to do some composition, music composition stuff, because I want to get together a ukulele songbook, Flatus Show ukulele songbook. And he said, no, all you need to do is... that burp wasn't too good. He said, all you need to do is get a monitor and a keyboard. Now, I have the keyboard from the eMac, which was really ugly. I mean, it was like, I had to clean it off. Now it's nice and clean, but it was really like, I can't believe how dirty it was. But I need to get a monitor now, so I'm going to get a monitor. And so there, I'm all set. And I have a backup hard drive so I can save stuff so I don't have to, you know, muddle up my hard drive on the laptop. So I am all set. But I am still, you know, if you want to send donations, that's okay. I just wanted to mention that this week I got another donation. As you know, last week there were two anonymous donations. And then JW, or Jerry, from Mandrake Society Radio sent in a generous donation. And this week, Zillafag, David, from Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, he sent in a generous donation. Thank you, David. Thank you, Jerry. And thank you, Anonymous 1 and Anonymous 2. Your generous donation is helping me buy the monitor. And, you know, all the stuff I've gotten, you know, the mics and stuff. So thank you for supporting the Flatus Show. I appreciate it very much. And if you other listeners want to donate, please feel free to make a donation at the website. Just go to theflatusshow.com and or theflatusshow.blogspot.com. If you go to theflatusshow.com and, you know, click enter, it'll take you to theflatusshow.blogspot.com. There's a link in there for PayPal. And so thank you. Thank you, one and all. It's all coming together. Shiza, look at this, peeking here. I have to figure out how to set this so I don't peek. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So I can be loud. Because I'm the F... There, hold on. It's my P's, I guess. I'm the Ethel Merman of podcasters with my loud voice. Hold on, that's peaking again. Oh! See, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to change. Normally what I do is... It feels like a good burp coming up, and they come up small. What I normally do is I record, and then I amplify. But I'm going to try this opening without amplification. I want you to let me know how it is listening to it in the car or whatever, because I listen to it on my headphones, and so I get all the nuances of my show that way. So, I mean, of my speaking voice and all the stuff that's going on. But I'm afraid that people aren't going to be able to listen to it in their car. So let me know if you listen to the Flatus show on speakers, you know, in your house or in your car or whatever. Let me know how the sound is, how the loudness is, whether you need to really turn up the volume to hear it or what have you, okay? So this opening, look at that, peaked again. This opening section, I'm going to not do anything with it. I'm just going to record it, and we'll see how, oh my God, peak. We'll see how that works, okay? Okay. So let me know. Let's see what else we have here. Okay, this week on Twitter, one of my friends, Peacekeeper, had a link to, he says, this is where the American Revolution is starting. Okay, the American Revolution has already started and ended about 200 years ago. But, you know, 230 years ago. But he's talking about a new revolution. And it's, I don't know, something to do with the New Hampshire state legislature, legislature sending a message to Washington. Which makes me think that these, he's kind of a right-wing guy, far right, and they're always, you know, willing to, you know, pick up a gun and become a Minuteman, just like our history says, you know, to fight for freedom. And, you know, there are other ways to maintain our democracy and freedom than picking up a gun. And, you know, that's all I have to say about that. Because, you know, I love New Hampshire, but, you know, there are a lot of kooks in New Hampshire. Just like Michigan. But anyway, so this week I talk about George Bush's family and the Skull and Bone Society. And I was going to talk about Yale University, but I didn't get a chance to. But Yale University has had a lot of famous people come out of Yale. Sigourney Weaver, Albert Inarritu. Now, Albert Inarritu is a playwright. I'm peeking. Albert Inarritu is a playwright, and when I was on this opera group, in Yahoo Opera group, because I like opera, there was a guy who claimed to be Albert Inarritu, who, and now Albert Inarritu graduated from Yale, same year as Sigourney Weaver, I believe. They were classmates, and he became a playwright. And he had a play in the early 70s or late 60s, and that's about it. And he writes for magazines. He's a writer. And in opera news and stuff. Now, this guy was who claimed to be Albert Inarritu, and I don't know, because I've never really met Albert Inarritu. He was very insulting, and, you know, it's like, I thought to myself, for somebody who is in your position, you know, you're an awful, awful person, who would want to, look at that. Who'd want to, you know, who'd want to hang out with somebody who always insults you? But actually, I got to know him fairly. Oh, I hope this peaking isn't too bad. I got to know him, and we corresponded. And you know, he was a nice enough guy. You know, I think he just—I don't know why he came off as being so cuntish. And I was used, or prickish, okay? Cuntish or prickish. I have to think of another word. Genitalish, okay? I'll say genital. Genitalish. He became, he fought against people who, well, there's a whole, like in the opera, okay, the online opera world, there is a lot of flame wars going on. And there's all these different people. I could name them all, but I'm not going to. I got tired of it, and that's why I sort of stopped participating in those forums. Because it was just like, who the fuck cares, you know, basically, about the shit they talked about? I mean, I love opera, but, you know, who cares about, you know, Emma Johnson's stool sample, you know? I mean, whatever. But anyway, let's go into the next thing, okay? So I was going to talk about Yale, and I really didn't. But there's a lot of stuff from Yale. A lot of interesting things about Yale. Which, you know, maybe I'll talk about in a future episode. Or if you want to talk about it, you can, you know, call me or send me a message about Yale. Or if you went to Yale, you can tell me. Oh, well, another thing about Yale. Another person who went to Yale, Chef Mark. Chef Mark is a remarkable palate, I believe. And he's a chef, and personal chef, and he has a podcast. He's pretty famous in, you know, gay circles. Am I too loud?
No, it's fine.
Okay, I'll close the door.
No, it's okay.
Okay. He is, and he's really smart. I mean, he's a businessman. And I follow him on Twitter, and, you know, I know who he is. I've seen him. Seen him at PodCamp Boston. He's accused of button. And, he has a culinary media something or other. Hold on, Culinary Media Network. And there's a group of podcasts, you know, cooking podcasts, which are part of that. Him and another person who started that. They do videos and all sorts of things. But it's very good. And they're going to be putting out a cookbook, and they were looking for test cookers, people to test the recipes, and also to take pictures of the recipes and, you know, send back the results to them for their cookbook. So I have their link is on my webpage. So I know I have listeners who like cooking and are into that sort of thing. So I mention it. And I had I also emailed them saying I'd love to do it because I love taking pictures of food. If you go to my Flickr page, and you can find the links for that on my webpage, you'll see that I have pictures of food. I think it's really fascinating. So okay, that's Chef Mark and the cookbook, Culinary Media Network's cookbook. It's exciting, podcasting and social media. Now, let's see what else we have here. I have an email from Manager John. Manager John is a listener of, listened to several shows that I listen to. And I follow him on Twitter. He, you know, he always had these pictures of him or whatever. Well, recently on Twitter, he had this picture of himself in this, you know, sleeveless t-shirt, and he's like, you know, flexing his muscles. Man, Manager John, hot. Now he's married. He's married to a woman. And, but he is hot. I'm telling you. So, you know, all the, you know, people who are wanting to see it, well, he actually took down that picture. Maybe he's getting too much notice and his wife got angry, but Mrs. Manager John, nice catch. Nice catch, Mrs. Manager John. Manager John, you can tell your wife that. So he writes John, Manager John types, I should say. Hey, Kenty, went to call in, but the bloody phone battery died. That's what I get for twittering so much at work. Laugh out loud. Sounds like a bad thing. So, through the show, that would be episode 173, the last show, you played the sound clips where a voice of religious authority was speaking about the indoctrination of children into fanatical forms of Christian faith. That's just frightening. But I know how much it exists. The clip you played at the very end, where the child is speaking to another child about martyrdom being great and fun, I think was the most sad of all. Children do take the beliefs they are taught and make them their own, but then it practically takes an intervention to tear it out of them. So true, John, so true. I don't have any children yet, but I do believe that I would like to raise my own with a grounding in the church as the values the local church... grounding in the church, as the values of the local Christian faith are critical to the moral stature of a person in today's society. Trust, honesty, faith, and forgiveness. These are the cornerstones of a decent person's moral fabric. The church does a good job of teaching those. I'm not a zealot who feels the need to go door to door handing out pamphlets, or even who does attend church on a weekly basis. I believe your beliefs reside in your heart and do not really require a ritual to live honestly and faithfully. That, and I work 70 hours a week, with Monday being my only day off, and then even just half off. Anyway, great show, and I do enjoy the unexpected segments. Very well done. Talk to you later, Kenty, and see you on Twitter or elsewhere, Manager John. Of course, Manager John, I will see you around. We do rub elbows in the potosphere. So thank you so much for writing. Now, I'm interested here. You say here that trust, honesty, faith, and forgiveness are cornerstones of a decent person's moral fabric. I'm not so sure. I mean, I understand what you mean by your moral fabric. Okay, trust and honesty and forgiveness. I would put them into your moral fabric because I think that makes sense. But faith is, I'm not really sure faith has anything to do with morality. I don't understand how that fits in with morality, but that's okay, you know, because, you know, you can have whatever you want. But faith, to me, just means faith is faith. It's to have belief in something which you can't prove. Anyway, you can't prove it, there's no proof. No scientific proof of something. That's faith. You have faith in something. It's something that, you know, well, I believe this. I can't prove it. I don't know why it is. I just believe it. I'm not really sure how that fits in with morality. Morality meaning the doing the right or wrong thing. There are Christians out there who would say that the wrong or right thing is to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, as God incarnate. And I would argue that morality is more than that. But anyway, talking about, you know, what happened to all my listeners? Like, what happened to Richard in Annapolis, Maryland? Are you still listening, Richard? I haven't heard from you in a dog's age. I'm thinking maybe I scared you off. So if you're still listening and haven't been offended by me, you know, send me an email. Let me know you're still alive. Hope you're doing well. And then there's the fellow in Georgia who did my website. And why can't I think of his name? Isn't that terrible? I haven't heard from him in a dog's age. I think he stopped listening after he did my website because he's like, Darren from Florida. He's probably like, bitch, I ain't going to do your website. I'm tired of the Flatus show. It was like, you know, because I was sort of, he said he was going to do it. And I was like, you know, emailing him. Is it done? Is it done? Is it done? Is it done? And then finally it was done. And I think he probably said, bitch, I'm not listening to your show anymore. I'm going to listen to whatever shows he listens to. I'm going to listen to Archer. Okay. I listened to Archer's show once, many years ago, and I haven't listened to it again. But, you know, maybe I'll listen to it and I'll like it. You know, maybe, you know, I'm doing things now, but I probably won't be listening to his show anytime soon. But I wish him the best. Because I don't think he listens to my show. There's the East Coast podcasters, and they really have a sticks up their ass. I'm very friendly and open. I listen to anybody, but, you know, when it's a one-way street, you can go fuck yourself. You hear that, Sharita? Okay. So, yeah, so that's the, so that's that.
Hello?
Senti, listener Johnny here. Just wanted to call and say that Jesus would shift his robe if he knew what people were doing in his name these days. Just saying.
Bye. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you for that nice voicemail. That's very nice of you. It is so true. If Jesus knew what people were doing in his name, he'd probably shit his robes. Okay, next thing is a new person I met online. And when I say meet online, you know, you there have an online presence. Okay? And this guy is named Muscle Daddy Jake. And he's a bodybuilder. And he's into, you know, body... He's older... He's older. He's, you know, he's only a few years older than me. He's less than 10 years older than I am. And, or maybe 10 years older than I am, but he's young. I mean, you know, in this grand scheme of things. And he is a bodybuilder. And he's also into bodybuilding hypnosis, helping people with bodybuilding and hypnosis. So I found him on YouTube, and I was corresponding with him. So he's a really nice guy. And he likes Stockhausen. And I thought that was really odd. And Thomas Adis, A-D-E-S, a modern composer, English composer. Very fascinating, very interesting. He has a MySpace page, too. Oh, you know what? I can put the MySpace page in the notes. I'll do that. Muscle Daddy Jake MySpace. Muscle Daddy Jake MySpace. Because I don't go on MySpace very often. But he has a MySpace page, so I'll put the link in there. And if you want to friend him, you can tell him I sent you. Kenty sent him, sent you. He's looking for, he's basically wants to use, to test out his hypnosis on, you know, younger guys who are into bodybuilding to see if he can, see what kind of results they're going to have. Because, you know. I listened to one of his tapes and MP3s, and it has helped me. You know, it's a good you know mantra to have like in your head, so you can you know go to the next level. You know, focusing on exercise and stuff like that. But I'm not really sure how much you know muscle I'll be gaining, or how big I'll ever be. I mean, you know. I'm just hoping to gain enough muscle to look, you know, good naked. I mean, not that like I don't look bad naked now, just, you know. But yeah, Muscle Daddy Jake, nice guy, like him. Let's see what else is there. What else is there? Is there anything else? Oh yeah, Johnny and I went to the a thing last night. What's that thing, Kenty? A thing was a fundraiser for animals. There's an animal shelter being built in Gloucester. And they had a fundraiser last night, Cape Ann Animal Shelter. So we went with some friends. They had got a table. They had gotten a table. So we paid our shekels to go. And we had some dinner. And there was music and dancing stuff. Johnny and I didn't dance. But I'll tell you, the music was so loud, and it was, like, stuff I didn't even, like, some of the stuff I knew. But it was just so interesting what gets people moving. It's the same crap, the same songs. It's like, you know, what was it? Pretty Woman, okay? It's like, that starts, and they're like, oh, Pretty Woman! They're all dancing and stuff. It's like, I thought to myself, people have been doing that same thing for how fucking long? For, you know, years, okay? And I think to myself, what happened to music from the past that, you know, elicited the same response? It was like people today don't have any choice but to react to this music. It's like these DJs have the same fucking, I'm cursing again. Sorry, Mother Superior, if you're listening. They have the same, you know, lineup. And it's like, I hate that. I really do. I hate it. I hate movie music that, you know, manipulates your emotions. I hate it. I hate being manipulated with things which I don't choose to be manipulated with. So anyway, on with the show.
Nah. That's Brenda Starr, you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you.
Brenda Starr. Hi, kids. It's a Brenda Starr update. Last week, Brenda Starr and Ringo had a conversation in Paris. They went to Paris because they were being followed in London. Sage is sleeping with Madame Leduce, an old friend of Basil's. And so Ringo tells Brenda about Basil's secret army. So we can find out some backstory here. Basil originally went to Kazakhstan to search for a cure for his disease. As you know, he has a rare genetic disease which affects all the males in his family. And what he has to do is find black orchids. He has to make a serum out of black orchids to prevent insanity. Because if he doesn't have the serum, he goes insane. Now, the thing is with the black orchids is that they don't... They're all over the world, and they don't show up in the same place every year. So, for example, Basil had a secret lab in South America where he was raising black orchids, but apparently they only grow wild. So, you know, he found his field of black orchids 1 year, made the serum, and then had to make enough. So he had enough serum until he found his next field of black orchids. So he ended up in Kazakhstan looking for a cure for his disease instead of just taking the serum. And Sage is his son, so, you know, Sage is probably going to have to take black orchid serum as well. So we find out that he was looking for his disease and realized that there was a market for artifacts from Kazakhstan. So he sold a bowl to Aurora to fund his quest for a cure, for his disease, whatever it is. So we find out that Bentley Price became the go-between, and then Aurora finally wanted to meet Basil. And they hit it off and had a brief, short-lived affair. So then Ringo discovered, because Ringo is Basil's servant or whatever, friend, pal. Ringo discovered that Aurora was using the proceeds to fund an army, which was to be used to destabilize Kazakhstan. For the benefit of, you know, Aurora and whoever else is involved. Isn't that nasty? So when Basil learned this fact, he was outraged and demanded from Aurora half of the profits from the artifacts that he sold her. And he used this money to raise his own army. His own army of teachers. That's right, teachers to educate the people of Kazakhstan. Brenda is taken aback, and she's like, she doesn't know how to take this information, but she says, you know, this is fantastic, I'll have to write about it. Of course she wants to write about it, she's a journalist, you know, she wants to give away all the secrets. So Ringo pleads to her, says, do not report this, be silent, because if the Kazuki government finds out that Basil is educating the people, they'll have him killed because education in Kazakhstan is the most dangerous thing you can have because, you know, an educated public is, you know, a dangerous public. That's why, you know, Bush had his No Child Left Behind. To keep them all behind. Now, so he finishes. It's not just Bush. I mean, I think that's a bad idea. Okay, I'm getting into politics now. But anyway, let's finish his Brenda Starr update. So he finishes by telling Brenda, well, yes, I've told you that, but I haven't told you the whole truth. I haven't told you everything. And Brenda is perplexed, and she's like, well, what is the whole truth? And Ringo turns away and says, the whole truth, Brenda, is that I'm falling in love with you. So Ringo has fallen in love, is falling in love with Brenda. Is Brenda falling in love with Ringo? And what about Basil? Has Basil and Trad, have they gotten back to Kazuka-stan safely? And what about these teachers, this army of teachers? Are they carrying AK-47s or pieces of chalk? And what about Miella? Was she one of the students of these teachers, of this teacher army? And will Sage ever wake up? Or is he taking Ambien? Ambien. This segment is brought to you by Ambien. Anyway, we'll find out the answers to these questions and more next week. Hi, kids. This is Kenty. And this is actually the very first segment I'm going to be recording for the Flatus Show. And it is about Bush. George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush. Now, I knew that the Bushes were a dynasty, but I didn't know that his grandfather was a politician. Apparently, he was a senator in a Connecticut senator with a name like Prescott Bush. I mean, you know, I had thought that, George Bush is like, oh, I'm from Texas. You know, he has this fake Texas accent. And, but he's really just a Yankee from Connecticut. And so anyway, I came across an article on the internet, and you're probably saying, well, it's from the internet, so it's probably not true. And this is from The Guardian, which is a newspaper in the UK, guardian.co.uk. And what it is, an article, it's called something of like, did George Bush's grandfather help the Nazis, basically. And as it turns out, he was a director, according to this, it says, George Bush's grandfather, the late U.S. Senator Prescott Bush. It says the late U.S. Senator Prescott Bush, makes it sound like he just recently died. He's probably been dead for 4 decades. Was a director and shareholder of companies that profited from their involvement with the financial backers of Nazi Germany. And so this investigative reporter, just like Brenda Starr, looked into it and came to the conclusion that the Bush dynasty was actually founded from money earned during this period. Apparently, there was some sort of Silesian steel company which Bush was somehow involved with, and they used the Consolidated Silesian Steel Company. They used labor from the concentration camp, Nazi slave labor. And what happened was in 2001 or 2002, these two Nazi slaves, survivors, not Nazi slave survivors, concentration camp survivors, was going to sue the Bush family. This all happened right before Bush's second election. I hadn't heard about this. What the fuck did I do? I had not heard about this at that time, and so when I found this, I thought it was something new. So, you know, I've learned about this thing called linking on Facebook, which I think is really cool, and so I went onto Facebook and I put a link. So, one of my friends on there said, are you kidding? And I said, what did I say? Let me see. I said, I didn't write the article. And then my friend J.W. Richard, Jerry, remember I talked about him last week or the week before, he said, and it's not a joke. And then my the initial friend said, David, I'll call him. Oh, I'm peeking. Peek. Okay. It's my laugh. It's the laugh that Charlie White likes. So, I mean, at least he said it. He liked it at one time. So, anyway, David says, can't you let it go, man? King Barack is in charge now. Let's see what the Messiah's got. He's got complete control to do whatever he wants. Also, did you know Kennedy's secretary's name was Lincoln and Lincoln's secretary's name was Kennedy? Think about it. So he makes it sound like I'm some sort of conspiracy guy. I linked to an article, which is from a, you know, a well-respected publication, The Guardian. It's not like I'm linking to the Weekly World News, you know. And so I didn't really get that. And also about the King Barack, he seems to think that because he's well-liked that he's in complete control. Well, we all know that if there's going to be any kind of king, it was King Bush because of, you know, the power he wielded from the White House. Or how about King Cheney? But we know that we live in American democracy. It doesn't have room for kings or queens. Well, maybe queens. So, you know, I don't know what he's getting at. He's clearly, to me, comes off as being pro-Republican, which is fine. I don't care. As you know, the Flatus Show has a wide variety of listeners, including Republicans and born-again Christians and, union workers and all sorts of people, gay, straight, and I'm peeking again, gay, straight, and in between. The only people who aren't listening to the Flatus Show are my family and friends. But isn't that the way it always is? So anyway, so I responded to David. I'll call him David. I responded. I said, I don't know about King Barack, and I don't care about Lincoln and Kennedy. And I doubt George Bush is a Nazi. It's probably true. He's probably not a Nazi. But if his grandfather did business with Hitler and profited, he's a cunt. Now, as you know, all Flatus Show listeners, and this is show 174, I have talked about the use of the cunt word, or the word cunt. And how it is, a colorful word to be used sparingly, but, you know, should be able to be used. And we all know what it means. Besides the vagina of the female of the species, or actually the vagina of anything, we know that the word prick means the male member, sexual organ of the males. And when we call people a prick, it usually means something bad. Likewise, when you call somebody a cunt, it means something bad. I'm an equal opportunity, non-PC person here who likes to use the full range of language in when I communicate. So if you don't like that, you can go fuck yourself. I peeked again. I'm trying to get used to this new microphone. I can't believe the sound and how cheap it was. So anyway, David then responded, nice use of the C word. Why don't you say cunt? Nice use of the word cunt. Okay. Always effective. By the sound of your last name, I need to check your relatives. I guess he thinks my last name, Steffler, sounds, I don't know why he needs to check my relatives, but I guess he's probably saying that, well, you know, I'm of German descent, so my relatives probably, helped the Nazis, which is possible because, you know, my relatives did live part of my relatives lived in Nazi Germany, but the part that came here actually left Germany before the Nazis rise to power. So, no Nazis in my family. From genetically speaking. Perhaps. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're all dead now, so. And like I said, you know, I said, I don't think George Bush is a Nazi, but I mean, and probably his grandfather wasn't even a Nazi. But the fact remains that he did business with Hitler and profited. So he's a cunt. Or prick, whatever you want to say. But, you know, I use the word cunt because I think it actually rolls off better, has more of a shocking value. Though, at this point, my listeners are probably not shocked by the use of that word. So I said, well, it's pronounced like you're saying Smith. Many people get it wrong. as about my last name. I thought that was funny. But anyway, it's a very interesting article about this, you know, George Bush. But, you know, it's really fascinating. And this is the way the article is. And it's a little sensationalistic, is that there's some clear evidence, but then there's also the writer, the journalist, says, we can't really make a clear connection between these two things. Like, papers are missing. So, was it a cover-up? Or, like, for example, there's this company, and it says, well, from 35 to 39, we know that it was owned by so-and-so. But after that, we don't really know much about this company. It was... I did yawn, but I covered my mouth. You know, we can't verify its ownership. Another thing is this company that, this U.S. company, UBC, which apparently there was a share in George Bush's name, or Prescott Bush's name, okay? What happened is that we find out that it's actually owned... that the UBC is actually owned by another bank, of a Dutch bank, the Bank Voor Handel Ein Sleepvert in Rotterdam, who we find out is owned by Thyssen, who was a big financier of Hitler and his rise to power. So George, the Prescotts, right, those people, whoever was involved, him and his friends, they all went to Yale, by the way. They're like, oh, no, we don't know anything about it. This is owned by so-and-so, you know, this bank in Amsterdam. So when they went to go look at this bank in Amsterdam, they really couldn't find much information about it. Isn't that interesting how that works? So that's the long and short of it, is they used this UBC in America for... Thyssen's funds, which was helping Hitler's rise to power. And I'll have a link to this article. Or if you go to my Facebook page, I have it linked, and you can read it yourself. And I recommend that you read it so you have a better understanding. But why is it so hard for Republicans to understand that, to take any kind of criticism? You know, it's like they come back with name calling. I never saw this before. It's not like, sorry. I've never seen this before. It was, I found it interesting. And, you know, he made it sound like I was a big attacker, like I was attacking the Bush family personally. Well, the Bush family can take care of themselves. And what's true is true, you know? Regardless of how the world looks at truth. So there. Okay? Next. I peeked.
To the tables down at Murray's, to the place where Louis dwells, to the dear old Temple Bar we love so well. Sing the whiffin' poofs assembled with their glasses raised on high, and the magic of their singing casts its spell. Yes, the magic of their singing, of the songs we love so well. Shall I wasting, and my mourning, and the rest? We will serenade our Louis, while life and voice shall last. Then we'll pass and be forgotten with the rest. We're poor little lambs who have lost our way. Baa, baa, baa. We're little black sheep who have gone astray. Baa, baa, baa. Gentlemen songsters, off on a spree, damned from here to eternity. Lord, have mercy on such as we. Baa, baa, baa. We're poor little lambs who have lost our way. Baa, baa, baa. We're little black sheep who have gone astray. Baa, baa, baa. Gentlemen songsters, off on a spree, damned from here to eternity. God have mercy on such as we. Baa, baa, baa.
So anyway, talking about conspiracies, because, you know, everybody likes conspiracies. Am I going to get this? Is this going to be right? And is it going to sound okay? Yeah, anyway, Prescott Bush belonged to the Skull and Bones Society. That's a secret society at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. And just to mention, his son, George Herbert Walker Bush, whatever, the H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush both also belonged to the Skull and Bones, as well as John Kerry and a host of other people. I was looking at this. There's a list in Wikipedia of men. They're all men, of course, who belong to the Skull and Bones or whatever it is, and Skull and Bones Society. And Stephen Alan Schwartzman, he is a billionaire, American businessman, an investor, and chairman and co-founder of the Blackstone Group, the private equity and financial advisory firm. He attended Abington School District. That's where I went to. That's where I graduated, Abington High School. And he went to Yale University, and he belonged to Skull and Bone Society, too, at the same time that George W. Bush was a bonesman, as they called him, a bonesman. It sounds like a boner to me. It sounds like an erect penis. I don't understand how John Kerry could be a bonesman, but that's another case. It's interesting because he's married to Teresa Hines, and H.J. Hines, heir to the H.J. Hines Company, father of H. John Hines III, belonged to the Bones, was a bonesman. I can't get over that. Bonesman. He was a bonesman in the 30s. But it goes all the way back to 1830. And the first U.S. president who was also a bonesman was Taft. And I think he's also the president that became Supreme Court justice as well. So anyway, it's a secret society at Yale University, and there's an interesting article about Skull and Bones at Wikipedia. That's where I get all my information for all your information needs. Oh, me. Peeking again. Okay. How the hell am I peeking? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? I'm away from the mic, but can you hear me now? How is that? I'm real close to the mic now. Yes, I'm close to the mic. Anyway, the Skull and Bones Society is basically a secret society of Yale University. And I doubt that there's really any kind of conspiracy. But, you know, where men meet secretly, there are lines of power. And, of course, you know, it's an Ivy League school, so they're generally going to be... Look, fuck that. Every time I turn away, don't look at this, it peaks. Where, you know, it's an Ivy League school, rich people go there. They're bound to be deals made. You know, Johnny Jones, the heir to whatever fortune, and Jimmy Jones, or that would be weird, but Jimmy Smith of the other fortune, you know, they're in line with each other, you know. They're in the same circles. They went to the same prep school, which in the Bush case, they all went to Andover up here in Massachusetts. I guess, you know, one could look at that, you know, who went to Andover, the Andover private school, and, you know, is there a conspiracy because he went to the Andover private school that, you know, that there's a secret to keep everybody out who didn't go to the Andover private school? Probably, but, you know, I don't know if we'll be able to find out, you know, but, you know, I guess it's just a twist of fate, you know? I've never belonged to a secret society. I don't know even what you would do. Apparently, they have the bones of Geronimo, and the Apache Nation is actually suing Yale for the return of Geronimo's... remains. Oh. I wonder if that mic is going to pick that up, because this is truly the Flatus Show. But anyway, the Geronimo lawsuit, they're trying to get back Geronimo's remains from the Yale University. So what do you think about the Skull and Bone Society? You think there's anything to it? What do you think the purpose of a secret society is anyway? What about the Masons? I mean, there are all sorts of secret societies out there. The Masons are a secret society. You have to go in there and, you know, swear that on your mother's grave that you're not going to reveal secrets, or they have all these weird rituals. And then there's the, you know, born-again Christian secret society where, you know, it's a group of Christians which are plotting to take over the United States to get rid of the Constitution. They're pretty open about it. It's hardly a secret. But, you know, we have these anti-American Christians who are trying to change the form of government. And, you know, they speak in code and speak secretly to each other. And, what else is there? You know, there's all sorts of secret societies. So what about the police? They say the police are a secret society. The thin blue line is that, you know, if a cop does something bad, his fellow cops, if they know about it, won't say anything. They keep their mouth shut. That's conspiracy, right? So secret societies are, in a sense, conspiratorial because they're secret.
Okay.
They are amongst themselves. What are you talking to?
What time? Okay, so we should leave Okay, good. See you then. Bye.
Who are you talking to? Did you hear any of that?
Kathy Morris. I just called her to see what time we should leave.
Uh-huh.
And it's 7:30, not 7 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to leave at 7:15.
Okay, good. So we're going to leave it 7:15.
Who's that?
I'm talking to my listeners. Can't you see them all?
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about secret societies.
Me, myself, and I.
Yeah, are secret societies... What do you think about secret societies? Do you think secret societies are conspiratorial in nature because they're secret?
Well, the first thing I think of when you ask me that question is things like Opus Dei.
Yeah, Opus
Catholic
Dei.
Ones, mm-hmm. And the ones in that book about, you know...
The Masons?
That novel that everyone was reading like 2 years ago.
Oh, the...
Dante.
Yeah.
Da Vinci Code. Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff like that. I think the secrecy... The Masons are probably pretty sanitized.
Yeah, but they're secret, aren't they?
Yeah, but they're... Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about, like... What do you think about secret societies? Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
If I had to say one or the other, I would say probably bad.
Yeah.
Because I trust them.
Right, because you don't know what they're saying.
Except for the Rainbow Girls.
The Rainbow Girls. It's a secret society.
The Rainbow Girls are...
Did you belong to that society?
No, but my sister did, and they had a guiding principle, which was secret.
Secret.
It was a secret word, but she told me what
the secret was. But don't tell the secret. Don't tell the secret.
Okay, I won't tell.
The Rainbow Girls had a secret word. I know this word, too, but I was...
Begins with a letter.
Shh. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Easy.
Don't say it.
I won't.
The Rainbow Girls. That's the secret society. They're plotting. Actually, the Rainbow Girls are behind all of the United States presidents. They're the ones who pick it. They're the conspirator. That's the conspiracy. The Rainbow Girls.
East of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love, dear, near to the sun in the day, near to the moon at night. We'll live in a lovely way, dear, living on love and pale moonlight, just you and I, forever and a day. Among the stars we'll find a harmony of life to a lovely tune. East of the sun and west of the moon, dear. East of the sun and west of the moon. East of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love, dear, near to the sun in the day, near to the moon at night. We'll live in a lovely way, dear, living on love and pale moonlight, just you and I, forever and a day. Love will not die, we'll keep it that way. Up among the stars we'll find a harmony of life to a lovely tune. East of the sun and west of the moon, dear. East of the sun and west of the moon.
From Hollywood, Tom Neal in The Unexpected.
The Unexpected.
The Unexpected. Life is filled with the unexpected. Happy, romantic, tragic, and mysterious endings to our most ordinary actions. Dreams come true, or dreams are shattered by sudden twists of fate in The Unexpected. Who knows what drama may happen tomorrow, or an hour from now, or in just a moment? Who knows what destiny has in store for the lady down the street, the fellow at the next desk, or you, yourself? Who knows? Listen for just a moment for The Unexpected. Neal, famous motion picture and stage star in a drama of the unexpected titled Solid Citizen.
I was smiling as I walked down Grove Street, saying to myself, well, Larry Price, you're a solid citizen at last with a good job and a wonderful girl who's going to marry you and a future. Yeah, a future instead of a past. Because that's all over now. All over and forgotten. Then I stopped walking for a moment and felt cold. It was 90 in the shade, but I felt cold.
Hello, Mr. Price.
What? Oh, hello.
Mind if I walk along with you?
Free country.
Yeah, that's what they say in books. But it ain't always free. Not for some guys, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't.
Don't you?
Who are you, anyway?
Steve. You remember me, Mr. Price? Steve.
I don't believe so.
Funny, I remember you so well.
Where?
I think it was a cell across from mine. Yeah, you had the cell across from mine.
What is it you want?
Nothing. What do you want, Mr. Price?
I don't get you.
Well, there's a lot of things you might want. Maybe you want to keep that job you've got down at the filling station. I hear Mr. Arnold is figuring on expanding, setting up another station for you to manage. Maybe you'd want to do that. And then there's that pretty little blonde number. What's her name, Helen?
Keep her out of this.
But you might want to marry Helen. I've heard it's on the schedule. You know, there's a lot of things I figured out that you might want to do.
All right. So I served time. I served it out, every second of it. Its day's done, marked off the calendar.
Well, I thought you might want to keep them that way. I thought it might be worth about $500 to you to have me leave town tomorrow morning without dropping in to see Miss Helen Page or any of your other new friends.
Why, you cheap little... I wouldn't pay you...
$500, Mr. Price. I'm staying at the River Arms, fourth floor. I'll be up late. Or until you get there. So long, 11-17-43. Wasn't that your number? 11-17-43?
He slouched away from me down the street. Just a little guy with a smirk on his cracked lip and a big secret in his head. My secret. But it wasn't mine any longer. I suppose I could have remembered him if I tried. I could remember every ugly detail about those 2 years in prison. If I tried. And now I had to remember. There'd be no more forgetting. Helen would know, too. There wasn't anything I could do about that. Helen would be told, but not by Steve. I'd tell her. No matter how it would tear at her heart, I'd have to tell her. And soon, very soon.
What's the matter, darling? Why the frightened look? Does marriage scare you? You can still back out if you want to.
Ellen, I want to marry you even more than I want to go on living.
Well, what is it then? Some deep, dark secret from your past come back to haunt you?
In a way.
Oh? Was she blonde or a brunette?
Ellen, there's something you should know.
I won't let you talk about it now. Everybody has secrets, Larry. They're fun and interesting, but not very important. Let's keep our secrets.
All right. If that's the way you want it.
Sure, Larry. Come on now. Cheer up and think about the future, darling. And us.
I was thinking about the future. About what it would mean to Helen when Riverdale found out she was going to marry an ex-convict. I tried to tell her. 20 times I tried to tell her. But I couldn't. The words wouldn't push themselves out through my lips. I could imagine the flicker of pain in her eyes. And the brave smile that would say, "It doesn't make any difference. We'll be married just the same." But it would make a difference. Always. So I couldn't tell Helen about the 2 years. When I was 11, 17, 43. I had a pass key to the gas station. I jimmied the door to make it look like a burglary. I knew how. Then I went inside and opened the register. The week's total figured just over $500. Nobody saw me at the station. Nobody saw me sneak up the fire escape at the River Arm. But in a way, I almost wished the cops had grabbed me before I could give the money to Steve.
460, 480, 490, 500.
Now beat it quick. Get out of town before I...
For what?
Well, you can.
Why, Mr. Price, I'll be glad to leave. When you've paid me.
I've paid you every cent.
500? You misunderstood me. I said 1,500, Mr. Price.
Okay, Steve. I understand now.
That's fine.
I understand that you'll never be paid enough. That's what I wanted to know.
Oh? In that case, I'll drop in on Miss Page.
I don't think you will, Steve. I don't think you'll do much more talking.
You can't scare me with that gun, Price. You're a solid citizen now, and solid citizens don't go around shooting people. They don't have the nerve to pull a trigger.
Okay, Steve. You win. I haven't got the nerve. I don't want any more memories in the back of my head.
You're a coward, Price. You always were. Even in prison, you were a coward.
I slapped him hard. Hard as I could. Over and over. Hoping that my hands dug into his face and smashed blood out of his yellow skin. He took it without moving until my palms were hot and almost bleeding themselves. Then I clipped him on the chin. Picked up the 500 and started back to my room to pack. I didn't care whether Steve told Helen or not. I knew that there couldn't be any future for us, wherever we went, whatever I did or tried to do. Why, Helen, what are you doing here?
I've been waiting for you, Larry.
Is something wrong?
I've got to talk to you. I thought about it all
day. You mean Steve's been here?
Steve? You fool.
It doesn't matter.
Let me talk, Larry. This afternoon, you said something about the past. Your past. And I put you off and tried to make fun out of it. But it isn't fun, Larry.
I know.
Everything always comes out, no matter how you try to hide it.
Sure.
So, if you don't already know... Well, it happened when I was just a kid, 6 years ago.
What?
Oh, it didn't seem like stealing. The pocketbook was just lying there on the department store counter. I thought someone had lost it, and I told myself I'd turn it in to lost and found. But I didn't... took it and kept it.
You mean you stole it?
Yes, sir. I was a thief.
Helen.
They sent me to reform school for 6 months.
Oh, darling.
I want you to know, Larry, while there's still time, see, you might not want to marry an ex-convict.
Oh, you're the only woman I'd ever want.
Are you sure, Larry?
Of course I'm sure. I want to marry you, Helen, even more than I want to go on living. And I'm going to.
Nothing else matters, not my past nor yours. I'm going to marry you.
You think the story is over, don't you? But wait. Fate takes a hand. Wait for the unexpected. For the surprising conclusion to Solid Citizen, starring Tom Neal, written by Robert Libbett and Frank Burt, and produced and directed by Frank K. Danzig.
Helen and I took the money back to the filling station. Mr. Arnold was there, and I told him the whole story. He just smiled and said the new station would be ready for me to manage when we came back from our honeymoon. Some people are pretty wonderful, and Helen, she's the most wonderful of all. After we were married, we never talked about that night. Never. Except once. It was on our first anniversary, just a year later.
Larry.
Yes, darling?
What are you thinking about?
Oh, nothing really. Just the past. Our past. It doesn't bother me anymore. It seems kind of unreal and long ago.
I remember too, Larry. And I get a little sick feeling down deep inside whenever I think about those awful months in Ashford.
Ashford?
Yes. At the reform school.
Helen, there was no reform school in Ashford 6 years ago.
What?
They built it after I got out of prison, I remember.
But Larry, I...
Why did you lie to me, Helen? Why?
All right, Larry, I never stole any money. I never was in reform school. But that day, last year... Yes. Steve did talk to me. He wanted money from me, too. So I knew your secret. And I knew you'd never tell me. I couldn't let you run away, Larry. Back to your old life. I love you too much. So I lied and gave myself a pass that it fit into yours. I wanted to share your life, Larry. All of it. Don't you understand?
I understand.
I didn't want to build our marriage on a lie. I had no choice.
Some lies are better than the truth, Helen. Sometimes a man needs a woman's lies to make him think he's bigger than he is. To make him the man he wants to be. To make him think he's really worth loving. For always.
Solid Citizen, starring Tom Neal, was transcribed in Hollywood. Listen for another exciting story starring Marcia Hunt, who meets the unexpected. This is a Hamilton Whitney radio production, produced under the supervision of Alvin C. Gershenson.
The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Your soul.